Are you somebody who enjoys looking after your body? If you didn't already know, through the London Physio, my very own brand, I have now released some fitness products that are practical. If you're somebody that travels and someone who loves working out at the gym, or you love working out at home and you love using your own products, then these will definitely be for you. We have all sorts, from double-sided gym mats to foam rollers to massage balls to resistance bands, the long ones, the short ones, the looped ones, the glutes bands, weighted skipping ropes, we have them all. So if you are someone who really enjoys looking after your body and you enjoy having lightweight products that you can take with you wherever you are, then these will definitely be for you. So if you want to get your hands on any of our products, my Linktree link is linktr.ee/joyogude. That's J-O-Y, October, Golf, Umbrella, Delta, Echo, where you'll find all the links to each and every product. I hope you enjoy using them. And if you do, don't forget to leave us a review. Back to the episode.
I was a yoga teacher for a really long time. Now I'm a therapist with adept psychology. I think there was a little bit of time when my dad left that I wasn't with him when he died. And a little bit of shame about relationships aren't a failure because they end. There were lessons that we gathered from that relationship, and sometimes relationships expire, and that's okay. I often say, trust your struggle. I think whatever we have gone through in our lives was the precise curriculum that we needed to show up in the world the way that we were meant to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Life Herself podcast episode. I am ridiculously excited, you guys. You have no idea. When I started this podcast, I was at the start of my isolation period. It was new grounds. I just didn't even understand what it meant, really. I just knew that I was in a lot of deep grief. And for the first time, I was starting to really scratch the surface when it came to processing, what had been happening around me, losing my dad, my life practically falling apart, moving, work, everything. I didn't realize that at some point this podcast would grow, not even in the sense of numbers, because you almost hope that, if you're putting out content, that's great. Regardless of how it goes, you hope that the direction's up, right? So not in terms of numbers, just in terms of the depths of conversations that I would have with people. I just didn't think that far. And I guess I'm reflecting on it now because I've just had the most amazing, and you're about to listen to it. I say I've had in past tense when in reality, it's going to happen after this intro for you. You're about to listen to one of the most deeply connected conversations that I've ever had. I'm about to introduce you to Danae Logan. So let's start there. I found Danae on social media, on Instagram to be precise, and not long ago at all. She made this video that just deeply resonated with me. And you know how people just come up on your explore page and your feed? It was a reel. So it was this video, and she was sat on the floor, but on something that looked like a chair, but with no legs. It was this circle. It was this sort of beautiful space. You could just feel the energy through that video. She was talking to people. It almost felt like she was facilitating a conversation in a retreat type of setting. And I just wanted to be there so badly. I was just drawn to her, that should have been my big sister. There was just something about her spirit that I just felt like I had to reach out to her. And I also just didn't want to keep her to myself. So I'm about to introduce you to Danae Logan. Danae is a family and relationship therapist. She's been a yoga teacher too, and she is a facilitator. She's a mom. She considers herself a seeker. And I'm just so excited for the depth of conversation that you're about to hear. She also, by the way, co-hosts a podcast called Cheaper Than therapy. And it's such an amazing podcast. You definitely have to listen to it. This conversation was deeply needed. We talked about everything from childhood traumas to her getting a divorce after 12 years of marriage and becoming best friends with her ex, who's the father of her son, Cairo. We talked about her parents' relationship and how her dad became blind when she was 18 years old. And from that to losing her dad and then building a new relationship with him spiritually. She's into astrology. She talks about this phase of life that we're all going through as human beings and how it was predicted. There's just so much in this one conversation. She even calls me out on my toxic traits, which I really needed to hear. She goes on to talk about codependency and attachment styles being the avoidant and all of these different things that I just feel like is missing in a lot of family units, in a lot of friendship groups, in our lives as human beings. And she talks about her personal journey to being where she is today. And honestly, I need you to watch till the very end. I need you to listen till the very end. Get your notes, your journals out if you need to write notes down, because I definitely will be. This was such an amazing episode to film. So it brings me so much pleasure to be able to share it with you. All of her links will be in the description box if you're watching on YouTube, but if you're listening on any podcast platform, then all of the links will definitely be in the show notes, okay? Make sure you subscribe if you're on YouTube. Make sure you follow if you're on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Podbean, wherever you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you follow and please leave a review. It would really, really help with the algorithm, and it would also help new people to find us and have these conversations with us and become part of our community. Before I bring Danae on, I also want to say that we now have a newsletter where I write you every week. Sometimes it might be about the podcast. Sometimes it might just be just no bullshit advice, you know, because that's what we're here for. We're here to create a community. So please check the show notes and the description box for that link. My Linktree link, as you guys know, is linktree.com/joyagude. So that's linktr.ee/joyogude, Joy Ogude, October Golf Umbrella Delta Echo. Now, without further ado, I'm excited to introduce the wonderful Danae Logan to you all. I am so honored to actually, no, but seriously, I'm going to be a fangirl for a moment. Is that okay?
I'm like, with this guy, are you kidding me? That's like the kindest, most ridiculous thing in the world.
Seriously,
oh my gosh.
Seriously. First of all, even thank you for responding to my message, because you guys, the way that I just invited myself into your DM and I was like, I'm zooming in there. I just left you a voice note and I saw this this clip that come up on like my Reels Explore page, and it's just crazy because you think, how have I never heard of you? Have I never seen, you know, your content and stuff? And it just deeply resonated with me, and I was like, oh my god! I suddenly got this feeling that I very rarely get, because I'm really good at like being my own big sister, where I was just like, this is exactly what I've been missing my whole life, like somebody who can give me advice, almost like a big sister figure, you know. Like,
it's like, you're gonna make, I'm like, we're like 2 minutes in, Joy, you're about to make me cry. That's so beautiful. Thank you.
But seriously, that's what I felt. That's how I felt. And I was like, I have to message her. I really do. And I don't really feel that way with a lot of people. I really don't. So thank you for doing everything you're doing in our space, in the wellness space. Thank you for being who you're being. I've listened to a few of your, you know, interviews, and I've heard you share so deeply and so personally, as well as the work that you do as a therapist. So I'm just so excited to get into everything today. Like, where do we begin?
Wow. I received that with just overwhelming gratitude. Thank you. That means more to me than you can imagine. And I'm so honored that you would even want to sit down and chat.
I also really love to start every episode with reels. If we were playing your reel back as Danae Logan, what would your reel look like? What was your childhood like?
Oh my gosh. Like, it feels like a big question, Joy. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, which is, you know, in the United States, it's like very middle America, very Midwestern, and it's a lot more diverse now. But at the time, I was sort of the diversity where I grew up, right? So me and my brother were like, and, you know, I think I had one Korean friend and we were like the token people of color. And like every picture that the school would take, it would be like, get them. They're like sort of like the diversity that we have in Nebraska, right? And so I think with that, a lot of like discomfort in myself came to the surface a lot of times. Just I was, as I am still, a very sensitive soul. And so I think things like, you know, discrimination or just like being othered and not understanding like why sometimes people weren't kind, like it really impacted me in a way that I was like very sensitive to and very sort of self-conscious about when I was little. And so little when I was younger. And so I think a lot of that, like, you know, I mean, there's so many layers, I think, not just like comfort in my skin in terms of like skin color, but also what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a woman of color, what it is to be a woman in a patriarchal society, what it is to be, you know, just someone attempting to be in relationship to other people as we all are grappling with, and all of the different ways that that was challenging for me as it is for us all. But I think learning how to navigate those in a way that I could really do it with integrity and really be honest about what the experience I was going through was and the things that I was doing to sort of navigate the challenges have been what I believe is, you know, I come from like an Eastern philosophy background in that I was a yoga teacher for a really long time. Now I'm a therapist with like a depth psychology perspective, which means like the psychology of the soul. So I really think of us as souls having a temporary human experience. And that's a lot of the lens through which I hold the work of therapy. But I believe my dharma was to find a way to like feel a deep sense of comfort in my skin so that I could support others in doing the same.
Oh my goodness. Like that was just magical. Like really just so many things you've said, like the idea of us being, you know, in some ways spirit beings. I know you didn't use that term exactly, but having a human experience, like that's what I deeply feel. Like when I talk to myself about my kind of, you know, parenting myself and like, you know, just giving myself space to have a cry or like whatever, I'm like, but remember, this is what you asked for. This is what you came here for. This is, you kind of saw the life and you chose it because you wanted the ups and downs and the peaks and troughs. And I also think that's why I'm very curious about how people have traveled, you know, the space that they're in now, like just the phase of life we're in and you sharing all of that. And I thank you for that. What was your family support like? Because clearly you were othered quite a lot in so many ways. What was the family support system that you had? Your kind of like the close-knit family, your immediate family. What was that space like growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was unbelievably fortunate in that both of my parents were, as human as they were both very present and worked really hard to give my brother and I as much, you know, of themselves and their attention and, you know, just taught us so many really beautiful lessons. They were like entrepreneurs, business owner operators. So there's a lot about like work ethic that I know for sure I took from my parents. There's a lot about loyalty and, you know, the fact that like my parents, I think in so many ways, as you know, I'm a couples therapist, so that's a whole other conversation we'll get into, I'm sure, maybe, about the lessons that I learned about relating from my parents. But I do think my parents stayed committed to their like friendship and their like, you know, respect for one another throughout my life until my dad passed away. And that was such a lesson for me. All that being said, I think, you know, there were ways that as much as I like had parents that were there and that were present, there were just challenges that my parents couldn't sort of save us from or I want to say like really empathize with. You know, I think as is so much of what most of our parents were raised to understand in terms of like what children need and like what a patriarchal paradigm from my perspective teaches us. It's like, as long as your children are like well cared for and they have like all of the material things that they need, that should be enough, right? And like quit crying about it. Like, yeah, like you got food on the table, you're fine, right? But there were other things, you know, there were things that like my parents didn't grow up the only Black kid in completely white environments. So they didn't really understand what that felt like for my brother and I. You know, my brother, I think, drove around our neighborhood in a very white area when he was 16 years old and like would get pulled over by the police like once every couple of weeks, that type of thing, right? And so like just like how that felt for him in his skin, I think those were things that my parents didn't necessarily take into account when their kids were going to be growing up in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, again, because I believe in like the path of the soul, I believe that all of it was like so unbelievably perfect. But I think that I always say to clients, nobody gets through childhood unscathed. All of us are human beings being raised by human beings. So right. All of our parents are doing the best they can with the tools that they have. And our work is to sort of say, okay, if I examine whatever it was from growing up that I felt a little bit hurt by or not seen within, what was the purpose of that? What was I meant to learn from that? You know,
firstly, so sorry about Dad.
Oh,
and did you lose him?
2018, you know, it's funny. I have such a like, I don't want to say like different relationship with us leaving these bodies than I used to, but I feel his presence so strongly and I feel so guided by my dad. You know, he feels so present still that, you know, as much as I like miss him in his physical form, I still kind of feel like he's with me. So I don't feel that sad about it a lot of the time, you know.
We talk about that. I lost my dad. In 2021, we were so close, so close. I mean, I almost feel like time doesn't really matter. You know, I'm starting to realize that now. And I just feel like that daughter-father relationship, there's just nothing like it. That bond, that relationship, I have talked on the podcast about, and I'm going off on a slight tangent because I want to circle back to that beautiful answer that you just gave us. But I feel like there's just a certain bond that nothing else matches it. Like even the mother-son relationship, I just feel like it's just different. That father-daughter bond, I almost describe my dad as being the source of my trauma, but also the reason why I breathe. Like he's my everything, from the reason why I cry, the reason why, like just so many different things, but it's all very beautiful. It's all this full circle of life. And like you, I feel like I'm lucky that he's no longer in his physical form. I have a completely different relationship with him now, completely different. And he, in spirit, he's different. My dad was the kind of man that would walk into a room and fill it with his presence. You know, everyone had drinks and he would pay. Like he was so egotistical, so funny, so full of life, just such a provider, you know, like he was just amazing. Like he just had this spirit about him. But in spirit, he's the opposite. He's so quiet. He's so hardly even talks. Like his presence is very fatherly. Like he would show up when things need to be said and when there needs to be a point made, but he's the complete opposite, you know. So I really want to explore what that experience is like for you, getting to know your dad now, and also just the journey to that, because we can't, and for me maybe like it's I can't talk about the good things without talking about how sort of horrible it was to get there. Because I didn't know I was even going anywhere. I didn't know this was happening. I didn't know it was coming. All I knew was that he wasn't here anymore and I wasn't expecting him to go. And so there's a lot of heartbreak. There's a whole journey to that. So I'm so excited talking about it, but I just want to hear, yours. I want to hear, you know, what has that journey been like for you, and what is it like now that you're on the other side of the pain and in quote loss, because we haven't lost him, right?
Well, I mean, first of all, do I just my heart as I'm listening to you talk about your dad. And there's just like a texture and an aliveness in the way that you speak of him, where you can almost feel his energy in the room, even as you're speaking. And I just think such a beautiful way to be remembered, you know, by your child, that when she speaks of him, there's an aliveness in you that comes out as you talk about his essence. And how beautiful. So thank you for sharing that. And yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I think I talk to clients sometimes who've had challenging relationships with parents about how when our parents cross over into the spirit realm, from my perspective, what we are left with in terms of our connection is their essence. It's like the truest truths of who that person is. I think, you know, from a soul perspective, to me, all of us come here as babies and we're just like pure, beautiful, positive energy, positive, whatever that means. But we're just light, right? Like I always say, babies are the gurus. They like come into these bodies with an awareness of everything that we spend the rest of our lives trying to get back to and remember, right? And yeah, I think that that's like that essence is what we return to when we return to source energy. But, you know, in terms of my dad spent a lot of his like later years blind. When I was 18 years old, my dad lost his sight. And so I remember when he left his physical body, just being so grateful that he didn't have to be blind anymore, because there was so much that he long to see and experience. And I'm going to get emotional as I talk about it. Like I have a 6-year-old little boy, and I remember like the minute he left his body thinking like, oh my God, he gets to see Cairo now, you know, and just being like so happy for him that he gets to like see what he looks like now, you know? And I think,
sorry,
just, no.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I think what's I'm like, see, we just like jump in and then yeah.
Oh my goodness. Sorry, I don't know why I'm getting so emotional.
Don't be sorry.
I think it's because it's true. It's it's so true, and I feel that so deeply, you know, that they're there. They see everything now. I'm sorry. Please,
yes, don't apologize. You know, I always say like the tears are like our moment of like resonance with the divine, you know, like when something brings us to tears, it's like that higher part of us, like in a deep resonant yes, from my perspective. So I love it. I love the tears. It's like, yes, a truth. I feel it, you know? But I think, you know, I have a dear friend who's like a medium and like really like connects to people on the other realm. And I think a little bit, I don't really believe in regrets. I say this a lot to clients and to people in general. Like, I think that like, it's that Maya Angelou thing of like, wouldn't take nothing from my journey now. Like, I think that everything, even the like ugh, parts or the little bit of like, not super proud of that moments, were exactly what we needed to understand And I think there was a little bit of time when my dad left that I felt grief in that I wasn't with him when he died. And like, you know, like a little bit of shame about like just some of the things I was preoccupied with, or like the times when I wasn't with him when he longed for me to be there. And I think getting to connect with him and him saying like, it was absolutely perfect and there's none of that, gave me such a deeper sense of like, all of this is perfect. Like all of the things that we're concerned about that we're like not getting right, like none of that's real. It's all like, we're all connected to each other, no matter what, physical bodies or not. And so I think getting to connect with him in that way just gave me such a deep sense of like, oh, it's all good. We're all fine. We're all safe. We're all held. And we're just accumulating lessons and expanding, It's like what I believe we're doing here.
Absolutely. And we're all here for a reason, and maybe multiple too. And ultimately, when whatever it is that we have come to do is done, it's like, okay, it's time to go back. And it really is going back, because that's where we've come from. You know, this is the place we've come to. I'm so sorry, because I really have listened to a lot of your interviews. I didn't know that about Dad and the way that you said, and now he could see your son. I just thought, oh my goodness, it's just so true. I feel like we have the opposite reaction to what we should have, but partly because we're humans, and that's actually how human beings work. You know, when we lose somebody, we're crying, we're upset, we're going through this process of grief that, regardless of how much of the truth we know, even within this conversation, I know I will have days when I would be paralyzed in bed, you know, crying from the grief and everything else. But then when you also get to that point where you're able to step outside of that through these beautiful experiences that some of us can share, you do realize that it was only part of that journey in the first place. And there's so much more after this. I mean, he speaks to me in different ways. So he comes in dreams, or like I feel his presence so strongly sometimes. And it's weird. I can feel like he's going back and forth to let me know, hey, I'm here. But my eyes are closed. Like it's crazy how it happens. But then I just know that he knows what's about to come. I know that he knows when something's a yes and when something's a no. I know that he's there. I know that he's the one trying to be like, hey, it's okay, I'm good. This side of town is actually all right. It's not so bad. You know?
Maybe better. Yeah,
absolutely. Stop crying. I'm here.
Nothing bad is happening.
Yeah, when you come in.
Exactly.
When are you coming? Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know that, you know, and so that just kind of like really got me. There's certain things that hit me when I'm not expecting it to. And this is still quite raw for me, this subject. I feel like I'm learning. Like I'm not deeply spiritual. Like I never was. My dad used to always talk about spirituality and I'd be like, come on, old man. Like I'm not deeply spiritual. So I feel like this is new grounds for me, you know, like I'm still kind of taking it in.
That makes me excited for you.
Are you somebody who enjoys looking after your body? If you didn't already know, through the London Physio, my very own brand, I have now released some fitness products that are practical. If you're somebody that travels and someone who loves working out at the gym, or you love working out at home and you love using your own products, then these will definitely be for you. We have all sorts, from double-sided gym mats to foam rollers to massage balls to resistance bands, the long ones, the short ones, the looped ones, the glutes bands, weighted skipping ropes, we have them all. So if you are someone who really enjoys looking after your body and you enjoy having lightweight products that you can take with you wherever you are, then these will definitely be for you. So if you want to get your hands on any of our products, my Linktree link is linktr.ee/joyogude. That's J-O-Y October Golf Umbrella Delta Echo, where you'll find all the links to each and every product. I hope you enjoy using them. And if you do, don't forget to leave us a review. Back to the episode.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's explore that, your family background a little bit. Was it that mom and dad were separated?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My dad, because he lost his sight, when I was 18, went to like a special school to learn how to do life blind. And, you know, my parents were, I mean, they never were divorced, but they very much just like later in life lived a little bit like separate lives. And it's, I think my mom was always there and always like taking care of my dad, always like very present for my dad. But in a lot of ways, so much of like the way that I frame couples work, and I'm primarily a couples therapist, which is kind of interesting, was informed by, well, several things, but a lot of like what I saw about relationships growing up, what I've seen about relationships since, the way that like, I think societally we tend to deem like marriages ending or relationships ending as like, as though they're a failure. And this is like a catastrophic thing that we should like feel like is devastating. Or, well, I mean, we could go on and on with like my perspectives about like how we hold marriage and union and partnership. But I think, again, it's all exactly as it was meant to be. But I think sometimes I wonder like what each of their lives could have been or looked like if they would have made the decision that, you know, I believe so many of us have the ability to make, which is, you know, relationships aren't a failure because they end. There were lessons that we gathered from that relationship. And sometimes relationships expire, and that's okay. And so what I really love to normalize for couples is that when I'm a couples therapist, I am sort of the relationships therapist, right? So I'm there to support what is best for the relationship. And sometimes that means the relationship changing form and two people attempting to go their separate ways or co-parent effectively or whatever that looks like. But I'm sort of obsessed with this idea that like we should be in search of the truest, most beautiful life we can possibly live versus something that like looks good on the outside, but we're like not super fulfilled on the inside of it, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I ask that because I come from a broken home. When I was 8, my parents divorced, but it was not a, you know, normal people divorce. It was like, we're taking the kids off you. You're not going to see your kids. And this was my dad taking us away from my mom, which is very rare.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Certainly now that I've done a lot of reflection and I look back, a lot of the things that I've become, or a lot of the words that people would use to describe me, or just things that I now know to be my personality, you know, a bit of a go-getter, a bit of a let's go and solve everybody else's problems, you know, kind of stems from, hey, sis, we have a lot of shit that we haven't sorted out here, like a lot of stuff underneath. And oftentimes we're blind to that. And sometimes they could be packaged into, I'm a physiotherapist. So, you know, I'm here helping people get better. You know, I've been deeply obsessed with putting people back together.
Mm. Oh my God.
I didn't know it.
I mean, just that metaphor.
You know?
Yeah.
I just wonder if you found any link. I'm not saying it's the same for everybody, but have you found any sort of link there, you know, between your, okay.
Yeah. You know, I often say, trust your struggle. I think whatever we have gone through in our lives was the precise curriculum that we needed to show up in the world the way that we are meant to. Mm. And if it's if we're willing to sort of do what you're speaking to, which is go back on a little bit of an archaeological dig and like do yeah. some of our uncovering of like, what were the lessons that I learned about certain things? What were the, you know, like what we in therapy like to say, like the implicit messages, like this was just implied, but nobody said it, or the explicit right. messages, like this was clear, like everybody right. said it, we knew it, like there is no question, messages that we got growing up. And I think we all have them in whatever our family of origin was. But then we come to a point of differentiation where I believe it's important for us to start defining, our truths for ourselves and really decide like, what is the meaning I made of some of these things? What is the story my inner child is still carrying about what some of these things meant that might be questionable, might be something I want to go in and challenge a little bit. And I think absolutely for me, I know for sure I was put in this body to support us in really loving one another, from my perspective, a little bit more than we are, a little bit better maybe than we are. I just, for whatever reason, have been obsessed with relationships. But I think a lot of that was some of the incongruency I saw growing up. You know, my parents never hugged each other, you know, like they were never like affectionate with one another. And I remember being a child and like wondering, you know, like, what's that about, right? Like, do you guys not like each other? Like, and I think there was a lot about our parents' generation. I don't know, I'm probably a little older than you, Joy, but
you know, getting there.
Oh well. But generationally, I think there was sort of an idea that like you don't air your dirty laundry and you like make things look like, you know, it's sort of the highlight reel of like what looks good on the outside is what matters. And I think what being a therapist has shown me above everything else is that everybody's got stuff. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious how much, you know, we'll be like, oh, like someone gets a divorce and it's like, we thought they had the perfect marriage. And sometimes yeah. I'm like, really? You did? Really? That's fascinating. And I think it's because all day I'm sitting listening to people tell me the truth of how they are really. But I think I became so kind of obsessed with like, what if we all just told the truth? What if we all were just like a little bit more real with each other and didn't sort of you know, show our highlight reels to the world, how might we feel a little bit more connected to one another if we told the truth of how we were feeling? And in our relationships, how might we have a little bit more fulfillment if we were honest about, you know, how this really feels and how we're showing up for real? And could we do this a little bit differently if we were willing to not be so afraid of things ending, that we're just like clinging on to the attachment at all costs?
I completely agree. And I think that one of my deepest traumas and one of, in some ways, my motive in life has always been work really hard so you can, you know, you can find a family and you can create a family. I can find a man or have kids, whatever the case might be. And for that not to break up, you know, like that's always in my life's work. It's like, find this right, perfect person so that you don't go through all of that. And you're right. There is no right, perfect anything. I wouldn't actually want to be locked into those relationships that look great on the outside and you're not, no one's doing the work. And quite frankly, I hadn't even done my own work. I find relationships very fascinating. It's pretty awesome that you're a relationship coach. That's one aspect of my life that I've never really had someone sit with me and go, these are the things you do. And like you, I've only seen the things that didn't work in my family. So I'm like, okay, let's try and avoid that. But we all know that if you're really trying to avoid something, it just keeps showing up. You haven't worked through it. It just comes up in so many other ways.
There's some of the things that you were saying that I think are just so, you know, I don't know that it is like, oh, with our trauma or the way that I experienced, like we didn't have good models of relating or relationships. From my perspective, Joy, I don't think anybody did. I don't think there's much about like a patriarchal society that teaches us to relate to one another well, that honors the feminine essence of who each of us are. And that's, you know, I'm speaking to the feminine within all of us, regardless of gender, but that's our ability to be vulnerable and to connect and to like be in all of the trust that we are held by source and something larger than us. Those aren't things that societally we've really been taught to value. We've sort of all been taught this happily ever after paradigm that once I meet the quote perfect person that you were speaking of, and what that ends up doing, I find with couples is, well, here's how it plays out. I won't say sometimes, like always. What ends up happening is when I meet my person who I've been putting a lifetime's worth of energy in the belief that once I meet this person, we will be at that point of arrival. That's a lot of pressure to be for someone. And each person has their own family of origin, their own way of doing things, their own pain points that have hurt them. So we're all bringing those things to the table. I like to say it's never like two people in a bed. It's like six people, depending on how many people, like, you know, divorced families, like whatever, like several people in the bed with us. And all of those perspectives, all of those, like, this is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. Like, we start like butting up against each other with that, right? And so all of a sudden it's like, is this what this is? And there's like a deep grief in that, because this was supposed to be my forever. This was supposed to be my happily ever after. And wait a minute, I just signed a marriage contract and you and I are stuck together in this forever. And so there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of like existential rah that comes to the surface for couples in that moment. And I believe collectively what we are shifting in terms of our consciousness around what it is to be in relationships is that this person is, you know, I'm a student of Abraham Hicks. I love Abraham Hicks's teachings. And Abraham will often say, we'd say, I like you pretty good. Let's see how it goes. Now, I think that is a little bit of a very like untethered way of holding relationships that most of us can't tolerate, because we need a little bit more than I like you pretty good. Let's see how it goes. However, I think moving away from an ownership template in general is where I see us trending as a human race, meaning no person ever really belongs to you. It's always an illusion that they do. And if we hold it that another person belongs to us, once they're my husband, my wife, my partner, what ends up happening is a lot of complacency. And from my perspective, a lot of entitlement. We don't even see that person anymore. It's like any, like say you got a new pair of jeans, right? In the beginning, you'd be super excited about them because they're yours, right? But then after a couple months, like, you wouldn't even care. You'd like barely even look at them and be like, yeah, those are my jeans, whatever, right? You don't hold them with the same excitement and reverence that you did when you first got them. But from my perspective, that's what I see with couples quite often. It's like, you need to meet my needs and you need to do this and you need to, because they're mine now. I don't need to like really show up and take responsibility, as you did, P.S., when you were talking a little while ago and you were talking about like what you're bringing to a relationship and how you're really doing some introspective work around that. Most people don't do that thing that you did about saying like, yeah, what am I going to be in this dynamic, right? And so it's a little bit more like, what am I bringing versus like, what are you not bringing? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. It's all in hindsight, actually. But honestly speaking, I didn't do that work when I was in the relationships that I've been in.
Most of us don't.
Yeah, it's only really now that I'm starting to really look at myself, you know, and that's from this period of grief, this sort of wave that I'm riding. I definitely think I'm guilty when it comes to owning friendships, family members, like, you know, because I expect that you are my mother and therefore I should feel this level of safety with you. I expect that you should want to care how I'm feeling. I feel like there's some level of justification there, but I would love to hear your perspective on where the line should be drawn.
Why did you ask the wrong person, sister? You're not going to like my answer, Joy. One of my favorite phrases to say to clients is expectations are preconceived resentments. And so there are no justified resentments from my perspective. If you are in the space of resentment,
yeah,
what that normally means is there's a way. And here's something fascinating I learned from Brené Brown not that long ago. So if you look at like the emotional energy underneath resentment, it's actually envy. So when there's like a resentment that I'm holding, it's something I want for myself, but I'm not giving myself permission to give to myself. And I think a lot of us outsource our power, meaning I look to other people to give me what I am meant to give to myself. But what ends up happening is if I believe I need someone else to fill me up or to do things for me that I'm capable of doing, one, it becomes like a bucket with a hole in the bottom that that person can never fill. It's like a bottomless pit of need. But also, we don't teach ourselves about our own resilience and what we're capable of doing for ourselves. You know, I think in so many of our relationships, we are just like really codependent from my perspective, meaning I'm okay if we're okay, or like I regulate my emotional world through my relationship with you. But the trouble with that is if I believe I need someone outside of me to do things for me, what happens when that person's not there or when they disappoint me or let me down, right? All of a sudden, I feel powerless. And so it's not that we shouldn't be relating to one another and we shouldn't be connected to one another, but I think the expectations get us in trouble. And that ends up being where I see we end up not loving one another very well, because it's like, I need this energy from you. Give it to me. And if you don't give it to me, then I'm in the space of resentment, you know?
Gosh, this is the wrong way to ask the question, but I'm like, I still
want wrong.
Why do I draw that line? Like, do I just not have standards, not expectations? Because the only reason why I'm like that actually is because I'm the sort of person that's kind of like the provider energy, the masculine energy actually in a lot of my circles. And this is part of my trauma too. So, like, but you know, I didn't realize it. And it really comes from seeing all these women that my dad got married to, you know, being so feminine energy around him, like almost passive energy. I'm not really expressing it, but my dad, I mean, he always described himself as like a piece of bread that everybody wanted a piece of, but actually he made himself that bread. He made people sort of need him. And I think it was intentional both ways. You know, he was such a provider that people felt so safe around him that they didn't feel the need to do anything themselves. I saw that growing up and I just thought, I would never be that. I would never be that person who depends on someone so much for my own emotional regulation. And even though I didn't really have the words then, I just knew I wanted to be very independent. So in the circles that I've built within my own family unit, within my friendships, I've always been the one who people come to for advice, for money, for, like, they don't even need to come to me. I will know, you know, like when you call your friend and they're like, that hello doesn't sound right. Like, I would know. You don't need to tell me. But because of that, I've realized that my toxic trait is I need you to stay loyal to me. I need you to
Oh, joy.
I do not. But I didn't know that I required these things. I didn't know that it would offend me so much if someone didn't take my side. You know, like I did. And they're really little things, actually. I'm starting to realize that I'm definitely one of those people who goes around owning people because I've spent my life giving them so much of me. And in return, there is this expectation that's not really discussed. That's not really said. But then I'm like, is that such a bad thing, though?
<You know? laughs> Yes, Joy, it is. No, I'm totally joking. And, you know, I'm joking because what you're describing a little bit is what I would call like an overfunctioning dynamic. But I want to circle back to what you were saying about the women in your dad's life first, because I think it's important. And I think so much of what we have been conditioned to understand as feminine energy is a really wounded feminine energetic from my space. And wounded feminine energy is like desperate, clingy, without boundaries, just like allows for breadcrumbing, whatever you will give me, I will take. Like, you know, it's really like, again, outsourcing a sense of self by like, I need you to see me in order for me to be a me, right? And from my perspective, what the modern feminist movement did with most of us was really teach us to be a lot of what you're describing as women, which is like, we can be like wounded men, we can have wounded masculine energy, and we can function there, and I can do it for myself, and I don't need you. And like all of this energetic that is actually a wounded masculine armor that I have seen so many of us as women wear. Now, here's the thing about that wounded masculine armor. And I would argue that you, and so I study masculine and feminine energetics. So here's where I go off on a little bit of a tangent. You'll have to bear with me, but
I want to hear it.
But what you're describing with your dad is also a wounded masculine energetic. And so that's sort of the avoidant energy. And the avoidant energy is the energy that gets a little hit of being enough whenever I'm desired by someone, right? And you're in that energetic. So you're sort of like replicating my dad's thing. Like if people need me, then they'll stick around and then they'll want me. So I don't need you to take care of me. I'll take care of you. And then you'll stay here, right? Which is a very codependent way of being, but it's a little different than the wounded feminine. The wounded masculine likes to be needed, or excuse me, desired, but not needed. And so it's like, you need me in the sense of like, I'll do for you, but I don't need you to do for me. It's very like a one-sided, it's not reciprocal energy, if that makes sense. Now, what ends up happening though is I've never met an overfunctioner who wasn't very aware of everything they ever have done for any person in any given moment. Like, talk about like this. I know the score. I've been keeping it. Like, there are 15 ticks on my side and two on yours. Like, I've never met an underfunctioner, or excuse me, why do I keep saying under? I've never met an overfunctioner who couldn't tell me in each of their relationships everything they've ever done for this person. Now, what that says to me is, you're going to have to bear with me on this one, Joy.
Oh, no, like, I'm ready. This is so, I feel like you're calling me out.
I'm calling us all out, right? Because these are like such common dynamics in our relationships. But what ends up happening is I'm not actually giving from an authentic desire within me. I'm giving in the hopes that you will give to me in return, because you will understand this is how we give, right? Like, if I do this for you, eventually you're going to give to me. Eventually you're going to see me. Eventually you're going to function for me in the way I've been functioning for you, right? And that's not what happens. What ends up happening is this person thinks, oh, Joy just loves to give. That's just who she is. She just is like constantly functioning for me. It makes her happy. So I'll just let her do that because that's her thing. Meanwhile, often you're stewing in resentment, like, yo, word, like, really? Like, I do all of this for you and I ask you for one thing, like having my back in this situation, and you don't. And it's a little bit, but if we're not honest about our intentions, a lot of times the honesty is with ourselves. Like, what is my intention really in this thing? then it's a little bit manipulative, right? And it's not conscious, but it's like, I'm attempting to sort of like get this person to, and people pleasing, I often say, is one of our most manipulative tendencies. We don't give from like the goodness of our heart. We give because we want to be perceived as being a good person, you know?
I didn't know that. Today actually, so on Mondays we put out these episodes and it's Monday today. So one of the episode that's just gone out today, we have like a really deep conversation. It was kind of like, you know, me realizing as well that I've been a people pleaser my whole life and I didn't know. I really thought I was the provider. I really thought I was the bringing everyone together, and that was always my intention. So even when I talk to my younger Joy now, I'm just like, you've always meant well. You've always been in that space where like, you've never really thought about yourself. You've always thought about what's good for us all. But underneath all of that was this element of being a people pleaser for whatever reason. I still can't, tell me.
I'm going to interrupt because I want to say something I think that's important about what you're saying. And it is, little Joy was doing that to keep herself safe, right? Because if people need me, then I'm not going to be abandoned, right? Like that's a little bit of a survival mechanism that we develop when we're little, right? Like if people see me in certain ways that like are, they love this about me, then they're going to want to be around me. And so it's really important that we don't beat ourselves up for the people pleasing and saying like, oh, that was manipulative. It's manipulative. And like, I was attempting to get my needs met, which was connection in a specific way. It's not like vindictive or malicious. It's, I'm just trying to like have connection with people. I'm trying to keep people in my world. So I just wanted to interrupt and say like, yeah, little Joy did that for survival. It's why she was doing it.
And that's so like when you say that, I'm just, if you knew, because my mom wasn't around as well. This kind of sounds like a therapy session I should be paying you for. But my mom wasn't around for about 8 years. You know, I wasn't allowed to see her, like literally taken away from my mom. So I was around all these adults that actually, quite frankly, didn't like me because it was because of them that she left. Like they literally forced her physically and all sorts. Crazy background, honestly, like just culturally the things that were accepted then and like the things that transpired and the things I still remember. And I think you're right, actually, in terms of like the abandonment. I've never really felt like I need people around me, but I guess my behavior, the way you put it, you know, maybe my behavior and being sort of nice to people and being kind to people and in some ways trying not to be abandoned by people, but then I still carry this masculinity, this wounded masculinity of I can do it on my own, good, you know? And it just seems very kind of like opposing for you personally, outside of being a therapist and outside of, you know, Danae, like actual Danae, with your background and what you now know and all the work that you've done with yourself and with others, where are you in that dynamic? You know, where is your
opposite traits? Girl, how much time do you have? But you know, a little bit, I'll be honest, as we're talking about the avoidant energy, which is what you're describing when you're sort of saying, I can travel around the world, I can do this by myself, I'll do things for people, but like I don't need anybody, like that's avoidant energy and game recognized game. So well aware, because that's been a little bit of my MO, you know, and I think that yes, we do it a lot of times because relationally there were points where we felt abandoned or we felt like, you know, rejection energy a lot of times from a parent, an initial caregiver or one of our parents that we had the most challenging relationship with. There was a little bit of a rejection energy. And what ends up happening with the avoidant is like, I will let people want me, but I will not let myself want people. If that makes sense. That's the little bit of like how that feels for us avoidance energetically. But I don't need people. Yeah. Like I love it if you want me, but I don't need you. Right. Like, even in the way, like I can feel the energy of the way you're describing these women in your dad's life, right? Like there's an energetic of like weakness, right? Like needing people. Like, and I get it. And, it's, you know, I always say avoidant energy and anxious energy are two sides of the same coin because they're both about control. And one, avoidant energy controls people by keeping them away, and anxious energy attempts to control people by pulling them in and keeping them close. But both of them are sort of distorted relationships with like attachment. So Yeah, I don't know many people who are just like securely attached and got everything. I'm like, if you meet that unicorn, I'd love to be introduced to them. I have yet to meet that person. But yeah, we all have what we developed in childhood based on what we were experiencing to keep ourselves safe and to, like, you know, and either people keep themselves safe by trying to stay close and attached, or people keep themselves safe by creating distance.
Yeah. And how do we find that middle ground? Is there even a middle? Because you've clearly said there's nobody that has the perfect attachment, you know, but where do we begin as human beings to, is it about finding the right partner that kind of is complementary? <Nope. laughs>
Because I'm like, absolutely not. Here's what we're not going to do.
Red flag.
No. I do think that's what most of what we're taught is what we should do, right? Like, if we just find that right person, then I'll be able to settle into a secure attachment. And I find that never works, but I think that that's by design, because again, if we think about this from the soul space, I believe we are meant to come into an awareness of the fullness of our power, the truth of our essence, like recognized within us. And I don't think we can do that when we believe that another person holds the key to our power. You know, I think relationships, from my perspective, end up being a really convenient place for us to hide out from doing some of the deeper layers of our work. Now, that's not to say that we can't continue to do work in relationships. And certainly, we can do a ton of work and then we'll get in a relationship and it's like, oh, here we go again. Like, all of my activation is coming right back to the surface. It's like, by design. But to answer your question, I believe we are meant to move into a space of interdependence. So if we've been a codependent society, and, you know, if we think about like those polarities again, there's codependency, which is what I think like most of us have been raised to be. And then there's hyper independence, which is a little bit what we were talking about in that avoidant energy, right? And so the middle ground is interdependence. And that is where I can be an independent, sovereign human, and also be in intimacy with another person. And so intimacy is intimacy. And if I have a solidified sense of self enough that I don't feel like I'm going to be rocked in my sense of self by being in relationship with another person, either needing them or pushing them away, then I can sort of like stay a me with myself while I'm in relationship with you. Now, how do we do that, right? Like, that is our deeper inner work from my perspective. And what has become the obsession of my life is these masculine and feminine energetics that I'm speaking of. I believe it's our work to integrate those energies within ourselves as a practice over and over again. But as I really tune into like what is being mirrored back to me in this relationship dynamic, or, and that's not just romantic relationships, that's like my coworkers, that's my parent, that's like whoever the person is that I feel activated by. If I really pay attention to what feels historic, what energetic I'm in, am I in wounded masculine or wounded feminine, like we were talking about, then we can bring ourselves to like a healthier space of masculine or feminine energy. And then we sort of integrate those things for ourselves. So I'm not really looking to another person to, like, a lot of times, like if I'm the core feminine in a relationship, and I'm speaking heteronormatively in this case, but if I'm a core feminine, I might think, oh, if I just get that masculine who, you know, sees me and holds a safe container for me and, you know, knows everything I've ever longed to have before I know myself. Like, we believe someone else can do that for us. They cannot. And so if I am both my fierce protector and, you know, I see myself and I validate myself, and that's my healthy masculine, but I'm also able to hold myself in my vulnerability with compassion and really see all that is beautiful about my emotions without judging them. If I'm able to hold those dualities within myself, then when I meet this gentleman that I'm like ready to be in relationship with, and as you were saying, like build a family, then I actually get to see him. You know, I think we are so much taught relationships are about what we can get. I believe our relationships are about what we can give, each of us give to one another, but we have to fill up our own cup to be able to give in a way that's authentic and I'm not depleted, right? So it's really the work of filling our own cup. Long answer to your question.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just so glad I'm recording this. The level of going back to just re-listen to what you've just said, and a lot of your answers, you know, are just so detailed. I appreciate that. Even just hearing that just clears up a lot of things for me, because I'm listening to that going, as much as I know that I'm, you know, I'm doing work and I'm very self-aware now, and I'm now the first person to be like, guilty, you know, hold my hand up. But a lot of these things I didn't know, you know, I'm still trying to figure them out. I haven't seen it. And maybe if I have, I haven't recognized it. We might have been around these adults who are doing these things, but they haven't communicated them to us, or we just don't know that. And you've explained it so clearly to me.
Well, thank you for that. But I will say that doesn't in any way make you an anomaly. I think that's most of us. And I will say, you know, I was married for 12 years. And I think as a like couples therapist, so much of what I was taught in terms of clinical psychology didn't really teach these ways of relating. There's a lot about what we're taught about relationships that doesn't, you know, there's a reason people think couples therapy doesn't work. It doesn't a lot of times, Joy. But the reason for that is that it doesn't actually take into account like these dynamics and what we're trying to pull from one another energetically. And there were things that I would feel in my relationship with my husband that I didn't have a name for, or I'd never heard articulated until I started really studying, you know, masculine and feminine energetics are based on Carl Jung's work and the anima and the animus that both of us, all of us, contain within us. And so those are those masculine and feminine energies. And so until I really started like looking at those energetics, but then also holding our relationships with like a soul awareness, I couldn't really see what was happening. But what I found was that once I started incorporating like what I was like, it was like putting together puzzle pieces, and I started working with couples differently. And from the space of attempting to develop interdependence, people started to find more fulfillment in their relationships. And I was like, all of what we're being taught about relationships is kind of BS. It's just, it's not really like leading to fulfillment. It's like really upholding the patriarchy and like, yes, these structures are in place, but like nobody's actually happy in their relationships. Like everybody's living like roommates and nobody has sex anymore and all of these things. And it's like, well, it's just what it is when you get married, but doesn't have to be at all. And I think that's where we're hopefully evolving as a human species.
Are you somebody who enjoys looking after your body? If you didn't already know, through the London Physio, my very own brand, I have now released some fitness products that are practical. If you're somebody that travels and someone who loves working out at the gym, or you love working out at home and you love using your own products, then these will definitely be for you. We have all sorts, from double-sided gym mats to foam rollers to massage balls to resistance bands, the long ones, the short ones, the looped ones, the glutes bands, weighted skipping ropes, we have them all. So if you are someone who really enjoys looking after your body and you enjoy having lightweight products that you can take with you wherever you are, then these will definitely be for you. So if you want to get your hands on any of our products, my Linktree link is linktr.ee/joyogude. That's J-O-Y October Golf Umbrella Delta Echo, where you'll find all the links to each and every product. I hope you enjoy using them. And if you do, don't forget to leave us a review. Back to the episode.
But I know you've got a book coming out, right, next year.
Yes, it will be out in May of next year.
Actually, just tell us a little bit about the book. I know that there's just so much to come from you, Danae. There is... Your light is so bright. You know, I'm nobody to say that. I really am not. But when I have listened to you, like your interviews, and you talk about your past, and, you know, I knew about your marriage, and you talked about, like, in some of the interviews I listened to, about your colorful, shall we say, like party days.
Like that. I'm like, you can say I was a little stoner. That's fine. Sugar, Joy. I was a complete stoner. Yes.
But you know, real. And to be in the space that you're in, I genuinely just, I'm so sorry to even be saying, like, I just can't see you doing anything else. This is your journey. This is your light. This is your path. This is what you're meant to be doing. And, you know, it's the tone of your voice. It's the way that you deliver it. It's the pace at which you speak. And like, just everything about you just is so, it's almost so whole with the nature of the work that you're doing. So I know that there's so much to come from you. I'm waiting for books. I'm going to come to a retreat sometime.
Yeah.
Everything that's coming. But please tell us about this book that's coming out in May 24, right?
Yes. Thank you for asking. It's, I love to say, like, it's been the love of my life for a little while now. And I think it's basically, you know, I was working with couples and I was starting to understand these energetics and the interplay of how they show up in our relationships. And people were like, is there a book that we can like read about what you're talking about? And I'd be like, no, and I'm going to write one because I feel like this is what we need to understand about relationships. And so it's really about how we heal codependency by integrating the masculine and feminine energetics within ourselves. And so I really, you know, examine and break down all of the ways that we've been socialized in terms of gender and in terms of like, I don't know, like all of our patriarchal wounding and like how capitalism impacts all of that. And then, you know, what I believe is us shifting from a more wounded masculine space, like collectively as a society, to a more integrated space. And so it's not like we're leaving behind a patriarchal culture in favor of a matriarchal culture. That's not what we're doing. We're going to be in more of the space of integration where we bring our healthy masculine and our healthy feminine to the table and just see what kind of a society we can create from that space.
So it's good news for us as a society, basically.
I mean, I think it's such an exciting time to be alive, you know, because I think there are a lot of the structures that weren't actually working that well, we're seeing crumble, but I think it's a good thing. I think there's a lot that is like being restructured societally in a way that is for our collective healing. I believe that's by design. I think that a lot of what we've experienced over the last few years, actually, I don't know if you study astrology at all, but the Aquarian age that we're in the midst of right now was prophesized as the time when the feminine would rise collectively and we would come back into a more integrated space as a society.
Okay, I know nothing about astrology, so please just, I feel like that's quite an important thing that you've just
mentioned. Well, I'm not an astrologer, but if you need one for the show, I have plenty of recommendations for you. That is outside of my scope of practice for sure, but I will say that I've been so deeply impacted by astrology and having a natal chart reading, which is what you do when you first, you know, decide to go to an astrologer and have your natal chart read, I think for me has been one of the most healing experiences of my life. Carl Jung used to have all of his clients meet with his sister, who was an astrologer, before he would work with them as a client. And so I send my clients to get an astrology reading all the time because I think there's just such a deep level of self-acceptance that comes when we understand so much about our astrological chart impacts the way we experience the world. And so it's a little bit of, yes, the things that we've experienced in the physical realm, but then there's also who we are in our essence, that hearing someone tell you about you in a way that you're like, oh my God, yes. It just feels so like the deepest exhale of like self-acceptance that you will ever experience.
So what is it that has been predicted through astrology? What's this phase that we're in that you mentioned has been predicted?
I think that collectively, we are living out of alignment in a lot of ways, and we have been for a very long time. And it's, you know, if you Google, your listeners too can Google this, if you look up the Thoth prophecy, I think that's how you say it, Thoth, but it's like basically a prophecy that was written like when Egypt was at like the height of its power, right? And they were talking about how there was going to be a time when we would get so disconnected from meaning that we would realize how out of alignment we were with our souls, and there would be like a great reckoning with how we want to live. And I think there's so many ways that we have put, you know, science and material realm things like, you know, we'll believe it when we see it, right? You know, and like, we are what we have, we are what we do, like these lies of our identity, we've put that over like, what is the reason I'm here in this life, right? We used to really value that. We used to really be in awe of the universe and of the life force that is within us. And I think collectively we've lost track of that a little bit. But in the prophecy, they spoke to how around this time of the Aquarian Age, which began in 2023, for the record, we would come back to what would be a renaissance of the rise of the feminine. And in this rise of the feminine, we would come back to our soul space and we would long for a deeper sense of meaning. And you're seeing it in so many ways with the things that have happened over the last few years. And it's like patriarchy's in its last stand, you know, like it's like that elephant that's like roaring its head as it like crashes to the ground. But it's, you know, a lot of this, I believe, is completely by design for us to get really clear on what we want to prioritize as a society, right? Like, do we want to continue to feel like we are just like these individuals away from one another? And, you know, I'm not my brother's keeper. I'm just out here to get mine. And all of these things are, you know, I think as an example, if we look at like, you know, what happened with the pandemic in 2020, what I thought was really beautiful about the way that we were living was like people realized, I can't do this by myself. I need to like meet my neighbors who I've been living next to for like 10 years and say, can my kid play in your backyard while I'm working? Cause I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do. Right. Or could the three of us and our kids like grab a college student who's also not doing anything and maybe have them give our kid a class while we're attempting to work during the day. But that's how we were meant to be living anyway. That's how collectivist societies have functioned for a very long time. And we've been in such an individualistic, wounded masculine paradigm for so long that we've really lost track of the soul space and the feminine within all of us. So all that to say, the rise of the feminine was sort of like prophesized to happen during this period of history that we're living through. So I think it's such an exciting time to be alive because we're watching it happen before our very eyes, you know.
I'm excited for my kids. That's all I can say. Because right. I truly believe everything you're saying. I've never heard of the Doth prophet. Is it D-O-A-T?
It's T-H-O-T-H. So I think it's Doth, but I'm like, you know.
T-H-O-T-H. Got you. I'm going to Google that. But I deeply believe everything you're saying, because certainly even for me, with all of my, I want to bring everyone together, and that I've only really gone through this world. I've only navigated this world from the perspective of what can I bring to my family? I've never really, it's only through my grief and through all of this and through trying to figure out the meaning of my life and why I'm here, really, you know, that I'm like, why don't we make a podcast? Why don't we listen to what other people have to say? Why don't we reach out to other people and see what other people are going through? What can I learn? What can I give? How can I be of service outside of myself? Like, my entire life has really just been about, right, we're going to make that money. I'm going to bring it in the family, make sure everyone's all right, you know? And that's a very selfish way to be, because even by thinking about my family, really what I'm doing is thinking about myself. I'm trying to protect myself. I'm trying to build for myself. I'm trying to, and also not just financially, but build these people around me, because that's my toxic trait, clearly, as we've established. And I truly believe that the pandemic has been a huge part of people starting to look outside of themselves. A lot of people have lost people they love. So that's one thing. And people have shown them compassion, you know, like just together as nations, as people, as the world, as Earth, like we've all been very compassionate. We've all stopped to think about other people. In fact, we've had no choice, you know, than to stop and actually think and consider what else is there outside of us. Okay, so one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, actually, this entire episode, I was like, speak to her about dealing with tough times because of that video, the video about the waves that you made. One of the things I was going to ask you is whether, if anything in particular stands out, but having had the conversation with you, I can already, you know, maybe even mention dad, but have you gone through anything in particular that resonates with you as being one of your darkest moments, or a time in your life that you didn't think you'd make it out, or you didn't want to, or is there anything that you're okay sharing with us?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you asked this, because I was thinking as you were talking about grief and the last few years, that to me, all of our difficult moments are initiatory processes. And from a depth psychological perspective, you know, the initiations a lot of times what we think of as like the dark night of the soul that you were describing are these periods of our lives that come to awaken us into a deeper sense of meaning. So I lose someone that I love, and all of a sudden I just am in like the questioning space of like, oof, like there's some sort of a visceral sense of like being rocked when we lose something that matters to us, that we just find ourselves deeply changed. And you know, it's so funny. I think what often comes to mind for me when I think about one of my initiatory processes was I had a friend who I went to grad school with, who we were so funny and joy. Like from the moment we met one another, it was literally like we'd known each other our whole lives in a way that I don't have the words to articulate. There was never anything romantic. It was literally just like, I was a married woman at the time, but like we couldn't get enough of each other. It was like being around him was like the deepest, clearest feeling of an exhale that I'd ever experienced. He was like my first, like, I know that there's like previous lives or other lifetimes because I just like believe that we have known each other before. It was that like, that resonant in his presence, right? And a little bit before we finished grad school, he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and, you know, had never smoked a day in his life, was like an unbelievably healthy guy. And I remember that I was visiting him in the hospital a couple of days before he passed away. And, you know, we were just sort of like sitting, looking at each other. I'm like getting emotional as I talk about it, but with just like the like, not saying a lot, but like with the understanding of how much each of us had been forever changed by knowing each other, you know, and we didn't even know each other that long, like grand scheme of life. We were like together for like 3 years, right? But I walked out of his hospital room and I remember thinking to myself, there is no reason whatsoever that I am entitled to more time in this body and he's not. And I've never felt more like I can't wait to see someone again than when he left his body. And I was so deeply changed by that loss. There is nothing in my life that I have taken for granted since he left his body. My marriage ended like a couple months after he died. And it's so funny because I remember thinking, well, at least my husband and I, like, we know that this needs to change form, but he's still here. Like I still get to experience him as a friend, and he has continued to be one of the best friends in my life, you know? And I think there's just a way that like death and loss and these things that are very much like the things that we're not going to get out of life without experiencing, if we are willing to hold them as an initiatory process, they give our lives such deeper meaning. And I feel like every single day I look at my little boy thinking, I have no concept of if he'll be here tomorrow. So let me treat him like today is the most sacred day of my life. And I think there's a way that death can initiate us into the sacred if we're willing to hold it that way, you know?
What's your son's name?
Cairo.
Cairo?
Mm-hmm.
K-Y-R-O?
It's like the city in Egypt, C-A-I-R-O.
Okay, I totally got that wrong. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
That's really beautiful. You know, like the relationship that you clearly shared with this person. And I'm a really strong believer in, you know, we've been here before. Like I feel like you see in babies more than adults, you know, you see a lot of, I've seen videos of babies like playing the piano and they can't even.
You've been here.
Anyone
who doesn't believe in past lives, you're like, okay, well, look at that child and tell me you don't believe in past lives. How could he?
Exactly. How is that impossible? But also those connections, you know, when we are, I don't think that we're supposed to. I think that sometimes we choose a different life or we choose a different path or we, you know, but when you have that connection again, that is pretty special, you know. And I'm so sorry. I want to say I'm so sorry for your loss, but I know that it doesn't hit the same way. Even when people tell me that, you know, it's like, haven't really lost, you know, but I'm sorry for that process. Why do you think that even though we know as human beings that death is the only thing that's guaranteed in life, why does it hit us so much? Why is it so life-changing? You know, why is it so almost the thing that sort of stops us in our tracks and either gets us to rethink everything or changes our path eventually. Why does that tend to be the thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, good question. I think there's, well, two things. I think that there's a fair amount of healthy psychological denial that we have to be in of our own death, because I think that it's just so big and so unknown that the like level of annihilation anxiety that it brings up when we really sit and like are in the constant space of like attempting to understand what it's really hard for us to understand, I think can be overwhelming to the psyche. So I think there's that, but I also think there's a level of something I heard Alan Watts say once was, we fear death because we're taught to. And a little bit in our society, like we don't talk about death. We sort of think about death as like something that like, you know, we put people in old folks' homes and like we don't watch the process of death. And we sort of think of it like it's this like horrific thing. Like all of these people, you know, died in this experience. And like, that's the worst thing that can happen. Now, please hear me as saying that's not me minimizing what it is for us to experience loss, because of course we want people here with us. But if we also understand that people aren't gone, then it holds a little bit of a different connotation, if you know what I mean. And like, even when I think about my friend I was telling you about, like it's not, and certainly like when he first left, like I missed him and I was like, of course sad. And I think there's so many ways that like I feel him and I don't really think of him as not with me anymore. So there's just a different experience I have of him as like being dead. But I think that there's a way that like, if we really usher in more of the space of contemplation around death, I love to meditate on death regularly because I just think it's really beautiful. If we hold death as something that's like really present in our minds and in our lives, I think we live a little bit more intentionally. And so I don't actually like feel like it's like morbid to talk about death. I like to talk about death. I like to like, if death is something that I fear, if death is something like that a client's like, you know, I can feel there's like a little bit of like death is impacting how I'm like, or the fear of death is impacting how I'm moving through this life. I like to like, let's get in there. Let's not make this the boogeyman in the closet that we can't talk about, because to your point, we're all on a one-way train. We're all going there. So I think it's better to get in right relationship with death so that doesn't have power over us, where we're just like defending against even acknowledging it as a thing, you know?
Yeah. Do you talk to Kyra about it?
I do. Yeah. You know,
is he old enough?
In a way that like he can sort of, you know, understand, like I'll talk to him about my dad not being in his body anymore. And it's interesting because there was a like period when he would ask me about my dad being gone, and I could see him like his little brain trying to make sense of it. And like, does that mean my dad's going to die? And he was like, for like a couple weeks, just like really wanting to like cling close to daddy. Right. Because he knows my mom is still here, but my dad is not. Right. And so he was like attempting to make sense of that. But I talk about my dad being one of my angels and like my little spirit baby. He's like, you know, I'm really into astrology and tarot. And so I got him his own tarot deck, and he talks about like talking to angels and like, you know, asking the angels for help and things. And so he thinks of like his grandpa as being one of his angels now, like present with him and looking out for him. But I think, yeah, even from like a young age, like I remember having questions about death and not really feeling like the answer was satisfying to me. And frankly, it created more anxiety. So I would rather be able to give him my understanding of what happens when we leave these bodies. And then from there, it's for him to take and see, like, if that feels true for you, beautiful. And if it doesn't, then you develop your own truths. But this is what mama believes, you know?
Absolutely. How old is Cairo?
He's 6.
Oh, he's so, this is like a really good age where he's not like so, so young, and he can like understand certain things, but still obviously quite young. I wish my parents talked to me about a lot of things, but death definitely being one of them. I wish that I knew what the pain would feel like. I'd never experienced a panic attack in my life until I got told the news, and I was sort of FaceTiming because my dad passed away in Nigeria. He was meant to be here, but you know, it was quite sudden. So I was FaceTiming whilst he was in the hospital, and literally there the whole process. But as soon as I heard it, like I'd never gasped for air so badly. And it was just like in moments, like I just couldn't breathe. I understand that to be a panic attack. I didn't know what that could feel like, you know, that I can't even put it into words, but it was that moment. It was a moment. And it was like a hole. And it was just, I can't describe it. Yeah. I just wish someone had sat me down and said, it could feel like this. I mean, they're not going to know. But also just little things, like as close as I was to my dad, you know, we were 5 and 6. He was, since I was really, 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 really young, like we've just always been very, very, very close. I don't know what his favorite color was. Mm. I knew a lot of things about him, but I never asked what his favorite color was. I never asked what his favorite song was. You know, these are things that, by the way, because although I know him in spirit, the things that I physically sometimes just want to feel like he's here. I want to look at a color and feel like my dad used to look at that. You know, I want to dance to a certain kind of music and be like, he danced to this like over and over and over again. I wear his perfume. So that's one physical way of kind of, you know, reliving something that he lived. But I just find myself in this space where I'm like, I want to live something that he lived. I want to see something that he loved to see. I want to.
There will be ways he will make clear to you, you know, let me know that this is a song that resonated. Let me know. I want to feel you. I want to understand. Like it may come to you in a dream. You will be surprised. Ask him.
I will ask him. I want to ask you this, seeing as we're on the topic of death, when you do leave your physical body, how would you like Cairo to remember you? How would you like him to remember you? Never asked me that. We're both a mess, aren't we? In a beautiful.
How would I? Yeah. I've never thought of it, and yet I feel like the intentionality with which I try to move through my life is about how he will experience me living. And I hope that he will like remember me as having left it all on the dance floor, just being so in love with living that it gives him permission to feel like he gets to live every breath of his life in the same way. And that he was just so unbelievably loved. Oh. By his mama. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
No. Beautiful. I'm like really touched by the question. Thank you.
You know, the idea of being loved is the one thing that's carried me through. Mm. When you said about abandonment, when you mentioned that word, that word in itself, it never really occurred to me that it resonated with me. One thing I've always known, with all of my dad's wrongdoings and all the things that he did right and not quite right, one thing I've always known was that he loved me. It's one thing that has really carried me through this entire year. And I hope that Cairo does see this when he's, you know, when he needs to further down the line. And clearly just from the tone of your voice and the slight change in your posture, I could just about feel a small little bit of how much you do love him. So
oh my gosh.
I really hope that he knows that he is so wonderfully loved, and he's got an amazing mom who's managing to touch the lives of people on the other side of the world without even realizing. You know, I actually looked at one of your retreats and I was like, there's one space left. Can we make it? You know, that's how much you've touched my life, and your energy is so beautiful. So I can only imagine, you know, the environment that you're building for him. And I thank you for everything that you're bringing, you know, everything that you are. So thank you so much for being so open with me and, you know, so willing.
Oh my gosh. Such an incredible honor. Thank you, Joy. Truly. I'm just so beautiful to spend this time with you. And I'm so honored that you'd ask. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You have to come back when the book is ready.
I absolutely will, sister. Thank you.
Ready. And for everyone who's listening, obviously, I'm going to be leaving links and everything else so they can follow you and just be part of your world and all that you're sharing to us. Is there anything that you want to tell people, any sort of, do you want to draw people's attention to anything else right now that's going on that people need to know that you're doing?
Well, thank you. I have a podcast called Cheaper Than Therapy with another a girlfriend of mine who's also a therapist, Vanessa Bennett, and we just pontificate on all of our, you know, therapy musings. So if you'd like to hear a little bit more of the conversations around our healing and our attachment wounds and all of those things, we talk about all that stuff all the time. And then my book's coming out next year. So it'll be called Sovereign Love, A Guide to Healing Relationships by Reclaiming the Masculine and Feminine Within. So please look for that to your listeners when it comes out. Yes, but not yet. I mean, hopefully sooner than still be out. But I'm like, that's a good note for my publisher. I'm like, when are we going to have that pre-order link?
Yes. Yeah, but no, I'll keep a live link to your website. So I'm sure that everything would be like once that's updated. But I, you know, thank you doesn't feel like it's enough. I'm so grateful. I really am. I really, really, really am. You don't know how much this means to me. I know that we're going to be friends, sisters. I don't know what it is, but we are. My toxic trait. Look at me claiming people.
Listen, I'm here for it. I love it, sister. So unbelievably honored. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. That was a conversation and a half, you know? It was amazing to sit with Danae and actually just pick her brain. Like, I just wanted to hear her talk and bounce my brain frequency back and forth, you know, to hers. And it was everything and then some. So very grateful to Danae for giving us so much time today. And thank you to you guys for listening. If you haven't already, then please go ahead and subscribe on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, if that's your chosen platform, but even if it is, there's no reason why you can't go on to Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Podbean and all the podcast platforms, Google, Samsung, I don't care. Go onto all of them and follow and leave me a review, please. I'm so excited that you got to be part of this episode and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next week, Monday at 5 p.m. BST. But before then though, don't forget we have a newsletter. So please check the link in the show notes. Subscribe to the newsletter because you hear from me throughout the week. It's almost like my way of writing letters to you guys and just like keeping you posted, especially on Mondays when the new episode comes out. I'm just so grateful. My heart is full. Oh, I feel so loved and just perfect. Like I'm just in the perfect place right now, just having had this conversation. And yeah, I'm really glad that I got to share that with you. So I will see you in the next episode. Bye, guys.